We present The Beach of Falaise by Robert Louis Stevenson, dramatized for radio by Jane Rogers.
I saw that island first when it was neither night nor morning. To the east, and right amidships of the dawn, which was all pink, the day star sparkled like a diamond. The land breeze blew in our faces and smelt strong of wild lime and vanilla. The chill of it set me sneezing. I had been, since 1868, on a low island near the line, living solitary among natives. Here was a fresh experience. Even the tongue would be quite strange to me. And the look of these woods and mountains, and the rare smell of them, renewed my blood.
That's Falaise, where your station is, Mr. Wiltshire. Just beyond the break in the reef. Here, take my glass. You can make out the houses.
Thanks, Captain. Ah, yes. Yes, I can see brown roofs peeping among the trees.
You catch a bit of white there, to the eastern. That's your house.
Ah.
Coral built, stands high. Veranda you could walk on three abreast. Best station in the South Pacific. When old Adam saw it, he shook me by the hand. I've dropped into a soft thing here, says he. So you have, says I. And time too. Oh, Johnny. The next time we came round there, he was dead and buried.
What did he die of?
Some kind of sickness. It appears it took him sudden. He ran out on the veranda and capsized over the rail, and when they found him, he was clean crazy.
Was it thought to be the island?
Well, it was thought to be the island, or the trouble, or something. I never could hear but what it was a healthy place. Our last man, Vigors, he left out of fear. Said he was afraid of Black Jack and Case. They've lived there long enough without any sickness.
Oh, there's a boat coming now. Looks to be a 16-foot whaler. Two white men in the stern sheets.
I see the glass. Yes!
But Togs turned me sick and sober.
All right, Papa. But you'll have to brace up. There's going to be a marriage. Mr. Wiltshire here is going to be spliced.
Oh, to who?
Uma.
Uma. What's he want Uma for? What in hell does he want Uma for?
Try your Papa. Oh. Tain't you that's to marry her.
I guess I shall please myself, Captain Randall.
Now, I gotta go and win round her old mother. So I leave you to have a nice chat with the captain.
The time I passed in Randall's company was a nightmare. The room was stifling hot, for the house was dirty and low and small. The three men's beds were on the floor, with a litter of pans and dishes. I was entertained by that remains of man, his tongue stumbling among low old jokes and long old stories, and his own wheezy laughter always ready, so that he had no sense of my depression. He was nipping gin all the while. Sometimes he fell asleep, and every now and again he would ask me why I wanted to marry Uma. The sun was down, the sky all on fire, and the lamp had been sometime lighted when Case came back with Uma and the negro. She was dressed and scented. Her kilt was a fine tapper. Her bust, which was the colour of dark honey, she wore bare, only for some half a dozen necklaces of seeds and flowers. And behind her ears and in her hair, she had the scarlet flowers of the hibiscus. She showed the best bearing for a bride conceivable, serious and still. My conscience smote me when we joined hands, and when she got her certificate, I was tempted to confess. It was Case that wrote it, signatures and all, in a leaf out of the ledger.
This is to certify that Uma, daughter of Fahavao of Falaise Island, is illegally married to Mr. John Wiltshire for one night, and Mr. John Wiltshire is at liberty to send her to hell next morning.
I guess you can have her. You can have your pick of the lot for a plug of tobacco.
She doesn't look that sort.
Oh, I don't know that she is. I believe she keeps herself to herself. Don't misunderstand me. Uma's on the square. She's got more English than the others, too.
Ah.
On account of her mother hitched up with a white man.
Oh, well, that's handy.
All you have to do is let me walk the mother my own way. And I'll bring the girl around to the captain's for the marriage.
I don't care for the word marriage.
Oh, there's nothing to hurt in the marriage. Black Jack's the chaplain.
By this time, we had come in view of the house of these three white men, for a Negro is counted a white man in the island. The store was to the front, with a counter, scales, and the poorest possible display of trade. A case or two of tinned meats, a barrel of hard bread, a few bolts of cotton stuff, not to be compared with mine. The only thing well represented was the contraband, firearms and liquor. If these are my only rivals, thinks I should do well in Falesa.
The papa's pretty full this morning. He takes gin for a prophylactic. Don't you, Captain Randall?
Never took such a thing in my life. Take gin for my health's sake. Mr. Whatever your name. As a precaution.
Old Captain Randall was squatting on the floor, native fashion, naked to the waist, grey as a badger, and his eyes set with drink. His body was covered with flies. One was in the corner of his eye, he never heeded, and the mosquitoes hummed about the man like bees. To see him and think he was 70 and had once commanded a ship and come ashore in his smart togs turned me sick and sober.
All right, Papa, but you'll have to brace up. There's going to be a marriage. Mr. Wiltshire here is going to be spliced.
Oh, to who?
Uma.
Uma? What's he want Uma for? What in hell does he want Uma for?
Try up, Papa. Oh. Tain't you that's to marry her.
I guess I shall please myself, Captain Randall.
Now, I gotta go and win round her old mother. So I leave you to have a nice chat with the captain.
The time I passed in Randall's company was a nightmare. The room was stifling hot, for the house was dirty and low and small. The three men's beds were on the floor, with a litter of pans and dishes. I was entertained by that remains of man, his tongue stumbling among low old jokes and long old stories, and his own wheezy laughter always ready, so that he had no sense of my depression. He was nipping gin all the while. Sometimes he fell asleep, and every now and again he would ask me why I wanted to marry Uma. The sun was down, the sky all on fire, and the lamp had been sometime lighted when Case came back with Uma and the Negro. She was dressed and scented. Her kilt was a fine tapper. Her bust, which was the colour of dark honey, she wore bare, only for some half a dozen necklaces of seeds and flowers. And behind her ears and in her hair, she had the scarlet flowers of the hibiscus. She showed the best bearing for a bride conceivable, serious and still. My conscience smote me when we joined hands, and when she got her certificate I was tempted to confess. It was Case that wrote it, signatures and all, in a leaf out of the ledger.
This is to certify that Uma, daughter of Fahavao of Falesa Island, is illegally married to Mr. John Wiltshire for one night, and Mr. John Wiltshire is at liberty to send her to hell next morning. Signed, John Blackamoor, Chaplain to the Hulks, witnessed William T. Randall, Master Mariner.
A nice paper to put in a girl's hand and see her hide away like gold. But it was the practice in these parts, and not the least the fault of us white men, but of the missionaries. If they had let the natives be, I had never needed this deception, but taken all the wives I wish, and left them when I pleased, with a clear conscience. The more ashamed I was, the more hurry I was in to be gone. Case told Uma to show me to my house and bade us farewell. The village smelt of trees and flowers and the sea and breadfruit cooking. There came a fine roll of sea from the reef, and from a distance among the woods and houses, many pretty sounds of men and children. It did me good to breathe free air and see the creature at my side. All at once, she caught my hand to her face and pressed it there. "You good," she cried, and ran ahead of me, and stopped, and looked back, and smiled, and ran ahead of me again, thus guiding me through the edge of the bush.
"Is this house is yours?"
"Let us light the lamps, Uma. And here are my chests and cases. What, already opened?"
"Me? your wifey?
Her shadow went all the way up behind her into the hollow of the iron roof. She stood against it bright, the lamplight shining on her skin, and she looked at me with eyes that were eager yet daunted. The want of her took and shook all through me, like the wind in the luff of a sail. I was ashamed to be so much moved about a native, ashamed of the marriage too, and I turned aside and made believe to rummage among my cases. The first thing I lighted on was a case of gin. I prized the lid off.
Here, Uma, take these bottles and pour them from the veranda.
But you no like?
No good. Man, he drink, he no good.
You say true, but why you bring him? Suppose you no want drink, you no bring him, I think.
One time, I want drink too much. Now no want. You see, I no savvy I get one little wifey. Suppose I drink gin, my little wifey he fraid.
I think you good man. I belong you all the same pig.
I came on the veranda just before the sun rose on the morrow. My house was the last on the east. There was a cape of woods and cliffs behind that hid the sunrise. To the west, a swift, cold river ran down, and beyond was the green of the village, dotted with cocoa palms and breadfruits and houses. But the thing that troubled me was nearer hand. Some dozen young men and children made a half-circle flanking my house. They all sat silent, wrapped in their sheets, and stared at me and my house as straight as pointed dogs. When I had bathed and come back again, the crowd was greatly increased. I leaned my arms on the rail and stared back. Devil a wink they had in them. They were like graven images. They stared at me, dumb and sorrowful, with their bright eyes, and it came upon me things would look not much different if I were on the platform of the gallows, and these good folk had come to see me hanged.
I never saw such fools of Kanakas as your people here, Uma.
Savvy nothing.
What do they imagine? Fire will come down from heaven and consume me, bones and baggage. Let's get this stock unpacked.
Pretty soon they go away.
Somebody has been helping himself to my stores between the landing stage and here.
Oh, you got plenty fine dresses.
Aye, but I've lost a good deal. Oh, I could kick myself for being such a blamed ass sitting trapped with old Randall while that Case, or whoever it was, made free with my goods.
Case? Bad man.
I got all my stuff in order and chased off the rats and cockroaches and fixed that store up regular Sydney style. And when I looked up the mountain and saw the coconuts waving and totted up the tons of copra I would take, then looked over to the village dandies and reckoned up the yards of stuff they would want for their kilts and dresses, I felt as if I was in the right place to make a fortune. I should tell you, copra was what we traded for. It was the dried meat of the coconuts, and the oil they got from it brought our company handsome profits. But the day passed, and the devil anyone looked near me, and from all I knew of natives in other islands, I thought this strange. About 5 in the afternoon, I went out for a stroll to cheer me up. On the green, I saw a white man coming with a cassock on. He was a good-natured old soul to look at, and so dirty you could have written with him on a piece of paper.
Good day, sir.
Bonjour, monsieur. Comment allez-vous? Je vous souhaite bienvenue ici.
Do you speak any English?
Non. Non, français.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I can't do anything there.
He tried me again in the French, and then again in native. I made out he had something to communicate, and I heard the names of Adams and Case and Randall, and a native word that he said very often. I went home repeating it to myself.
What does fussy oki mean, Uma?
Make dead?
The devil it does. Did you ever hear that Randall or Case had poisoned Johnny Adams?
Every man he savvy that. He give him white sand, bad sand.
Oh.
Him got bottle still. Suppose him give you gin, you no drink him.
Ah, that old white powder story, I've heard that on other islands, old girl. It's nonsense.
You go see. You go ask Case how him die.
That's a fine gun, Mr. Case. Good shooting here?
A1. The bush is full of all kinds of birds. I only wish copra was as plenty. But there doesn't seem anything doing.
Isn't that blackjack in the store, serving a customer?
That's the first sale we've made in 3 weeks.
Oh, you don't tell me. 3 weeks? Ah, well, oh well.
If you don't believe me, you can go and look in the copra house. It's half empty to this blessed hour.
Well, I shan't be much the better for that. For all I can tell, it was wholly empty yesterday.
That's so.
By the by, what sort of a party is that French priest? Seems a friendly sort.
I see what ails you now. Galachet's been at you.
Yes. I made out he doesn't think much of your Captain Randall.
That he don't. It was the trouble about poor Adams. On the last day, when he lay dying, I said, "Look here, you're pretty sick. Would you like to see the priest?" He sat right up on his elbow. "Yes," he says. "Get galoshes. Don't let me die here like a dog."
And you sent for him?
You bet. Galachet jumped in his dirty linen at the thought of it. But we had reckoned without Captain Randall. He's a hard-shelled Baptist, he is. He hates the papists with a venom. He took and locked the door.
What happened?
Adams sat up, clapped his hands to his chest, and went into the horrors. He died hard, did John Adams.
But the priest?
Oh, he was hammering on the door outside and crying on the natives to come and beat it in and singing out it was a soul he wished to save. But what would you have? Johnny had slipped his cable. Next thing, word came to Randall the priest was praying on Johnny's grave. Randall was pretty full of liquor, and he got a club and lit straight out for the place. He and the priest slanged each other off in the native, and every time Galachet tried to kneel down, Randall went for him with the club. The end of it was the captain keeled over with some kind of a fit, and the priest got in his goods after all. But he was the angriest priest you ever heard of. Now he swears old Randall gave Adams poison, and when the two meet, they grin at each other like baboons.
Well, old lady, it's Sunday, I believe. We've had no customers all week, but there's no business to be looked for today.
You go pray?
Pray? In a church?
You bet not.
I stay house.
You're not going either? Don't you want to show off your new clothes?
I stay house with you.
Uma, Do you think I'm tabooed?
I think so.
I wondered whether I should ask her more, but it's a bad idea to set natives up with any notion of consulting them, so I went to Case. He was sitting alone, as he did mostly, smoking on the veranda steps.
Case, here's a queer thing. I'm tabooed.
Ha, fudge. It ain't the practice in these islands.
That may be, or it mayn't. It's the practice where I was before. You can bet I know what it's like, and I tell you for a fact, I'm tabooed.
Well, what have you been doing?
That's what I want to find out.
It ain't possible. However, I'll tell you what I'll do. Just to put your mind at rest, I'll go round and find out for sure. Just you waltz in and talk to Papa.
Thank you. I'd rather stay right out here on the veranda.
Well, I'll call Pap out here, then.
My dear fella, I wish you wouldn't. The fact is, I don't take to Captain Randall. Hello there. What's the story?
Well, I would have never believed it. I don't know where the impotence of these Kanakas will go next. They seem to have lost all respect for the whites.
I am tabooed, then.
Something of the sort. But I'll stand with you, Wiltshire, man to man. Tomorrow I'll have it out with the chiefs. They're afraid of me, or they used to be. Understand me, Wiltshire. I don't count this your quarrel. I count it all our quarrel. I count it the white man's quarrel. And I'll stand to it through thick and thin. There's my hand in it.
Have you found out what's the reason?
Not yet. But I'll fix them down tomorrow.
Well, you tell them who I am. I am no end of a big chief at home, and I've come here to do them good and bring them civilization. And no sooner have I got my trade sorted out than they go and taboo me, and no one dare come near my place. If what they want's a present, I'll do what's fair. But if they think they're going to come any of their native ideas over me, they'll find themselves mistaken.
Well spoken, old man.
Give the Kanakas plain sense and fair dealing and they knuckle under every time. They haven't any real government or any real law, and even if they had, it would be a good joke if it was to apply to a white man. It would be a strange thing if we came all this way and couldn't do what we pleased. So next day, I met up with Case outside the big oval house where the chiefs held their meeting. An excitable crowd jostled around the entrance, and when they spotted me, they began to crane and murmur.
Come along. I'll tell you when we get clear of this rabble.
What? Case, what's this all about?
The truth is, I can't rightly make it out myself. They have a down on you.
Taboo a man because they have a down on me? I never heard the like.
It's worse than that. You ain't tabooed. I told you that couldn't be. The people won't go near you, Wiltshire. And that's where it is.
Why won't they go near me?
Seems they're frightened.
Frightened? Are you going crazy, Case? What are they frightened of?
I wish I could make out. Seems like one of their tomfool superstitions. That's what I don't cotton to. It's like the business about Vigors being a devil.
I'd like to know what you mean by that.
Well, you know Vigors lit out and left all standing. It was some superstition business. I never got the hang of it. But it began to look bad before the end.
I heard a different story. I heard he ran away because of you.
Oh. I suppose he was ashamed to tell the truth. I guess he thought it silly. And it's a fact that I packed him off. What would you do, old man, says he. Get, says I, and not think twice about it. It ain't my notion to turn my back on a mate when he's in a tight place, but there was that much trouble in the village that I couldn't see where it might likely end. I was a fool to be so much about with Vigors. They don't seem to forget it.
This is all very well, but don't tell me what's wrong.
Wish I knew. I can't say fairer than that.
You might have asked them, I think.
And so I did. I'll go as far as I dare for another white man, but when I find I'm in the scrape myself, I think first on my own bacon. You show a queer kind of gratitude to a man who's got into this mess along of your affairs.
You tell me you were a fool to be so much about with Vigors. One comfort, you haven't been much about with me. I notice you've never been inside my house. Own up now. You had word of this before.
It's a fact I haven't been. It was an oversight, and I'm sorry for it, Wiltshire. But about coming now, well, I won't.
In short, you're afraid.
In short, I'm afraid.
And I'm still to be tabooed for nothing.
I tell you, you're not tabooed. The Kanakas won't go near you. That's all. And who's to make them? Do you expect a law obliging people to deal in your store, whether they want to or not? You don't mean to tell me you've got the gall for that.
I wouldn't talk of gall if I was you. None of the people are to trade with me, and they're all to trade with you. You're to have the copra, and I'm to go to the devil. And I don't know any native, and you're the only man here worth mention that speaks English, and you have the gall to up and hint to me my life's in danger, and all you've got to tell me is you don't know why.
Well, it is all I have to tell you. I don't know. I wish I did.
And so you turn your back on me.
If you like to put it nasty. I say merely, I'm going to keep clear of you, or if I don't, I'll get in danger myself.
Well, you're a nice kind of white man.
I went straight home in a hot temper and found Uma trying on all my trade goods.
You like too much my new dress?
You quit that foolery. Here's a pretty mess to have made. As if I wasn't bothered enough already. I thought I told you to get dinner.
I'll clear away. Quick.
You belong around here. You're bound to understand this. What am I tabooed for? Or if I ain't tabooed, what makes folks afraid of me?
Oh, you know Savvy?
No. How would you expect me to? We don't have any such craziness where I come from.
Case, no tell you?
No!
Damn, Case.
You might think it funny to hear this Kanaka girl come out with such a big swear. No such thing. She was way beyond anger and meant the word simple and serious. She stood there straight as she said it, and I never saw a woman look like that before or after. Then she bowed her head proudly to me.
Aye, shamed. I think you savvy. Casey, tell me you savvy. He tell me you no mind. Tell me you love me too much. Taboo. Belong me. So. Now I go away. Taboo. He go away too.
But Uma.
Then you get too much copra. You like more better, I think. Farewell, chief.
Hold on, hold on. Don't be in such a hurry.
You go see. You get copra.
Uma, hear reason. I didn't know, and that's a fact. Case seems to have played it pretty mean on the pair of us, but I do know now, and I don't mind. I love you too much. You no go away. You no leave me. I too much sorry.
You no love me. You talk me bad words.
Uma, there's no sense carrying on like this. I want you to stop here. I want my little wifey. I tell you true.
No, tell me true.
All right, all right. I'll wait till you're through with this.
You tell me true. You'd like me stop?
Uma, I would rather have you than all the copra in the South Seas.
She threw her arms about me and pressed her face to mine in the island way of kissing, so that I was all wetted with her tears, and my heart went out to her wholly. She was my only friend in that queer place. I was ashamed that I had spoken rough to her, and she was my wife, and the salt of her tears was in my mouth. It was late before we thought of getting dinner. We cooked each a dish, helping and hindering each other and making a play of it like children. I was so greedy of her nearness that I sat down to dinner with my lass upon my knee. She was the worst cook I suppose God made. The thing she set her hand to, it would have sickened an honest horse to eat of. Yet, I made my meal that day on Uma's cooking, and can never call to mind to have been better pleased. Now she made sure that we were friends, she set to talking. She was born in one of the Line Islands, and had been only 2 years in these parts, where she had come with a white man who was married to her mother. He was a drinker and a constant seeker after a soft job, and he died worth next to nothing. But he had a bit of land at Falesa, which was what put it in the minds of the mother and daughter to come and live here. Case encouraged them and helped get their house built. He was kind to Uma and gave her trade, and there's no doubt he had his eye on her from the beginning. Then up turned a young chief with some fine mats and old songs in his family, wanting to marry her.
Him very pretty.
You mean to say you would have married him?
Yes, yes. I like too much.
And suppose I'd come round after?
I like you more better now. But suppose I marry Irwin, I one good wife. I no common Kanaka. Good girl.
Well, I had to be pleased with that. But I liked the end of her yarn no better than the beginning, for it seems this proposal of marriage was the start of all the trouble. Quite suddenly, Iowain backed out and left that part of the island, giving no reason. Before that, Uma and her mother had been looked down upon as outsiders, but now they were shunned. No one called at their house, no one spoke to them on the roads. If they went to church, the other women drew their mats away and left them in a clear place by themselves. And the girls who had been jealous of Uma's luck with Iowain used to twit her with his desertion.
They tell me, no man he marry me. He too much afraid. Then Case, he comes about night times. Bring me gifts.
Oh, I suppose you thought Case very pretty and liked too much.
Now you talk silly. White man, he come here. I marry him only same Kanaka. Very well, then he marry me only same white woman. Suppose he no marry, he go away. But woman, she stop here. Him thief, tonga heart, no can love. Now, you come marry me. You big heart, you no shamed island girl. That thing, I love you for too much. I proud.
Oh, Uma. Listen here, old lady, I got a confession to make.
It's Missy. He come round to village in boat. You here?
Missy? Missionary.
Hey.
Well then, Uma, you stop here in this room and don't budge a foot out of it till I come back. A missionary is just what's needed.
As I came out on the veranda, the mission boat was shooting for the mouth of the river. She was a long whaleboat painted white, a bit of an awning astern, some 24 paddles flashing and dipping, and the missionary under the awning in his white clothes reading a book. We strolled down to the river. From the opposite side, there was another man aiming for the same place, but he ran and got there first. It was Case.
Get out of that! You low, swindling thief!
What's that you say?
I say you don't get between me and the missionary like you've got between me and everyone else on this blamed island. If I ever catch you within 6 fathoms of my house, I'll clap a bullet in your measly carcass.
You may do as you like about your house, but this is a public place, Wiltshire.
It's a place where I have private business. I've no idea of a hound like you eavesdropping, and I give you notice to clear out.
I don't take it, though.
I'll show you then! You had enough, Case? Get up or I'll take my feet to you.
I've had enough for this time, you dead... You devil! I'll show you!
Mr. Tarleton, I believe.
And you, I suppose, are the new trader.
I want to tell you that I don't hold with missions, and that I think you and the likes of you do a deal of harm, filling up the natives with old wives' tales.
You're entitled to your opinions, but I have no call to hear them.
It so happens that you've got to hear them. I'm no missionary. I'm no favourite of Kanaka's. I'm just a trader. I'm just a common, low, goddamned white man, the sort you would like to wipe your boots on. I hope that's plain.
It's more plain than creditable. When you're sober, you'll be sorry for this.
Now, you can't say I've deceived you. I want a service. I want 2 services, in fact. And if you care to give me them, I'll perhaps take more stock in what you call your Christianity.
You are a strange sort of man. What can I do for you, Mr...
Wiltshire, I'm what you call a sinner, and I want you to help me make it up to a person I've deceived.
I'm at your service, but only for the time my crew are dining. I must be much farther down the coast before night.
Will you follow me to my house?
I was sorry to see you fighting.
Well, I am to tell you all about that.
Missy, I'm glad to see you.
Hello, Uma. You are looking very well.
How's your... Uma, give us your marriage certificate.
No, I like
Come,
him.
You can trust me. You can trust me. Give. Now, Mr. Tarleton, I was married to this girl by Black Jack the Negro. The certificate was wrote by Case, and it's a dandy piece of literature. Since then, I found there's a cry in the place against this wife of mine. And so long as I keep her, I cannot trade. Now, what would any man do in my place if he was a man? The first thing is this, I guess. And the second thing he would do, if he was what I would call a man, and you would call a man, Mr. Tarleton, is to bring the girl right before a missionary and to up and say, I was wrong married to this wife of mine, but I think a heap of her now. And now I want to be married to her right. Fire away, Mr. Tarleton. And I guess you'd better do it in the native. It'll please the old lady.
Mr. Wiltshire, I have to thank you. Performing your marriage ceremony has given me great pleasure.
Well, I'll say the same for my missus and myself.
It's all much happy. But how your hand he get hurt?
Oh, on Case's head.
Good for you. Beat him.
You haven't made much of a Christian of this one.
If Uma bears malice, I fancy she has good cause.
Indeed she does.
And I told the missionary all about Case's dealings with Uma, and how he had turned the natives against me.
Well, I'm afraid you have a wicked enemy. I trained up a native pastor here in Falesa, Namu, and then I found out he was instructing the villagers that Vigors, the trader before you, had the evil eye. When I tasked him with this, he admitted he had it from Case, and when I questioned old Chief Fiasso, I learned that Namu had been encouraged to help himself from Case's stores and was consequently deep in debt. Whatever Case said, Namu agreed in fear and trembling.
Case, he tell Namu. Namu, he tell village, Vigors all bad.
Exactly. And Case stands accused of poisoning Adams. And you can see for yourself how dangerous he is. There's no question, but he has now made up his mind to rid himself of you.
He gives himself a sight of trouble. And after all, what for?
Why, how many tons of copra may they make in this district?
As much as 60 tons.
And what is the profit to the local trader?
You may say £3.
Then you can reckon for yourself how much he does it for. Now, I will speak to Namu and warn him he's observed. At the same time, you have 2 people here who might help you. One is the priest, and the other is old Chief Fiasso, who I believe has some influence with Maya, the new young chieftain.
Near a month went by without much doing. The old priest called round a few times and started to teach me native and French at the same time, and muddled me up with foreign languages worse than the Tower of Babel. And Uma and I worked at making copra from the dozen bearing trees on her mother's patch of land, since none of the natives would labour for us. A few times I went hunting in the woods, which were rich in game. Although no one would come near my store, I found people willing enough to pass the time of day with me where nobody could see them. And as I had begun to pick up native, and most of them had a word or two of English, I began to hold little odds and ends of conversation.
You like fill of tobacco?
Thank you.
Is there no road going eastward through these woods?
One time he rode, now he dead.
Nobody he go there?
Too much devil he stopped there.
Oh. Got on plenty devil, that bush.
Too much devil. Oh. Stop there all the time. Man go there, no come back.
Oh, hello. Looky over there, you no talk true. Case, he go, he come back, see?
Case, no all the same. Case, Diapolo.
Diapolo?
I go, no good meet that bad man. Diapolo.
Uma, what does Tiapolo mean?
Devil.
I thought Aitu was the word for that.
Aitu, another kind of devil. Stop bush, eat kanaka. Tiapolo, big chief devil. Stop home. Only same Christian devil.
Oh, I'm no further forward. How can Case be Tiapolo?
Case belong Tiapolo. Case only same his son. Suppose Case wish something? Tiapolo, he make him.
Oh, that's mighty convenient for Case. And what kind of things does he make for him?
Make him church. Devil church in desert.
How do you know this, Uma?
One chief, his son. Anamu, he go there. Hear him speak with dead men. Devil women singing and fiery devil faces.
In the desert out towards the east. I think I'll take a look at Master Case's place of worship myself.
No, no, go that place.
Yes, I will.
Diapolo, go for hot you.
I'll trust in God. I'm a good sort of fellow, Uma. God will see me through.
Diapolo, big chief in this place. God no can help.
Well, then, I must rely on my trusty gun.
Gun? He no help you. Diapolo makes spirits of dead men walk. You will not shoot dead men?
With the stories Uma told me of the desert and its dangers, she came near frightening herself into a fit. There were devil women who could sing a man to death, and pig men, and fiery smoking devils who would chase me. I paid little heed, and the next day, with my gun and a good knife, I set off upon a voyage of discovery. I made for the place where I had seen Case come out of the trees, for if it was true he had an establishment in the bush, I reckoned I should find a path. There were trees going up like the masts of ships, and ropes of liana hanging down like ship's rigging, and nasty orchids growing in the forks like funguses. Butterflies flopped up and down along the ground like dead leaves. The brightest kind of day is always dim down there. A man can see to the end of nothing. Whichever way he looks, the wood shuts up, one bough folding with another like the fingers of your hand, and sometimes he hears a sort of quick, stealthy scurry nearby that makes him jump and look to his weapons. Whichever way a man turns, the whole place seems to be alive and looking on. I had got to a place where there was an underwood of wild coconut when there came a sound of singing that I had never heard the like of. It rose and swelled and died away and swelled again, and now I thought it was like someone weeping, only prettier. And now I thought it was like harps, and there was one thing I made sure of. It was a sight too sweet to be wholesome in a place like this. I went mighty carefully with my gun cocked, spying all about me like a hunter, fully expecting to see a handsome young devil woman sitting in the bush. And sure enough, I had not gone far when I met with a queer thing. The wind came on in a strong puff, the leaves in front of me burst open, and I saw for a second something hanging in a tree. It was gone in a wink. If the thing had looked like a woman or a pig, it wouldn't have given me the same turn, but it seemed kind of square, and the idea of a square thing that was alive and sang knocked me sick and silly. "Well," says I, "if this really is a place where there are square things that sing, I'm done for anyway. Let's have my fun for my money." I laid down my gun, stuck my knife between my teeth, walked right up to that tree, and began to climb. I tell you, my heart was like ice. But as I went up, I caught another glimpse of the thing, and it seemed like a box. And when I got right up to it, I near fell out of the tree with laughing. A box it was. A candle box. And it had banjo strings stretched so as to sound when the wind blew. I believe they call the thing an Aeolian harp. "Well, Mr. Case," says I, "you frightened me once, but I defy you to frighten me again." The undergrowth was thick in this part. I couldn't see before my nose and must burst my way through by main force and ply the knife as I went, slicing the cords of the lianas and slashing down giant weeds which were sappy to cut through like carrots. A few steps beyond, I hit the path I had always been looking for. It was narrow but well beaten, and I saw that Case had plenty of disciples. There was a wall in front of me, the path passing it by a gap. It was old, built of big stones, very well laid, and there is no native alive today upon that island that could dream of such a piece of building. Along all the top of it was a line of queer figures, idols or scarecrows, with carved and painted faces ugly to view. Their eyes and teeth were of shell, their hair and their clothes blew in the wind. A little further on, I found the entrance between two rocks, like the entrance to a cave. I went in, and, looking round the corner, saw a shining face. It was big and ugly, like a pantomime mask, and the brightness of it waxed and dwindled, and at times it smoked. "Oh," says I, "luminous paint." And I must say, I admired the man's ingenuity. Any poor Kanaka brought up here in the dark, with the harps whining all round him, and shown that smoking face in the bottom of a hole, would make no doubt that he had seen and heard enough devils for a lifetime. I went back by the path, which, once you had found it, was plain and easy walking. And when I stepped out on the black sands, who should I see but Master Case himself, not 10 yards away.
"You've shot nothing, Wiltshire."
"I'm not on the shoot today."
"Well, the devil go with you for me."
"The same to you. Why don't you move along, Case?"
"And get shot in the back for my pains."
"We think alike."
"We can't stop here all day, though."
"Don't let me detain you."
"Look here, Wiltshire. Do you think me a fool?"
"I'm more of a knave, if you want to know."
"Well, do you think it would better me to shoot you here on this open beach? Because I don't. Folks come fishing every day. They might be watching us this minute. I give you my word, I don't want to shoot you. Why should I? You don't hinder me any. You haven't got 1 pound of copra but what you made with your own hands, like a slave."
"You're frank and pleasant, ain't you? I'll be the same. I don't mean to shoot you. Not today, at any rate. This business ain't done yet, Mr. Case. My name ain't Adams, and it ain't Vigors. And I mean to show you that you've met your match."
"This is not the talk to make me move on with."
"All right. Stay where you are. I ain't in any hurry, and you know it. I ain't got any copra to bother with. I ain't got any luminous paint to see to." I was sorry I said that last, but it whipped out before I knew. He stood and stared at me with his brow drawn up. Then he turned his back and made off fast into the devil's bush. I saw I had been an ass to give him warning. That which I meant to do, I must now do at once. As soon as I got far enough round the cape to see my house, I made out there were strangers there. There was a couple of armed sentinels squatting at my door, and a third native sitting on the veranda like a guest, and Uma was playing hostess.
"Ah, Chief Maya. He can bring you copra. He no afraid case now.
Missa Wilshi, I pleased. I come trade.
Not half as pleased as I am, Chief. Let's shake hands on it. What's the story, old girl?
Case, him after only same girl.
After Chief Maya's girl?
Yes, sir. Case bring gifts. As girl, he visit her night time. Chief Maya, he angry.
Angry, yes.
Oh, I should say so.
I come buy rice, tins, biscuits, cloth.
Well, I'm your man. See here, I'm sorry you had to wait, but I was looking up Case's Tiapolo store in the bush.
Oh, you no afraid?
No, not much. The place is a blooming toy shop. In England, we give these things to kids to play with.
You hear she-devil sing?
Look here, next time the ship comes round, I'll get some banjo strings and a candle box and make one of these same contraptions right here on my veranda. Then you can see for yourself how much devil there is in it.
You talk true.
Talk all the same Bible. You like visit Tiapolo place and see for yourself in daylight?
Day, yes. I come with my men.
That's the ticket. Case is a fraud and the place foolishness. You go up there in the morning, you'll see what's left of it. But don't get talking, Chief, because it's bound to get back to Case and then I'm a dead man.
No talk. Go up tomorrow. You my friend?
No, sir. No such foolishness. I've come here to trade, not to make friends. But as to Case, I will send that man to glory.
You no go in bush night time.
I told you, Uma.
You go die.
Look, fish out your Bible, and I'll take that with me. That'll make me right.
Bible no save you.
Well, that's just your Kanaka ignorance. Bring the Bible out.
Bible, right here.
There. Look at that. London. Printed for the British and Foreign Bible Society Blackfriars. There's no devil in hell can look near the Bible Society Blackfriars. Why, you silly, how do you suppose we get shot of our own I2s in England? All Bible Society.
I think you no got any. White man, he tell me you no got.
Sounds likely, don't it? Why would these islands be chock full of them and none in Europe?
Well, you got no breadfruit.
Now, look here, old lady, you dry up, for I'm tired of you. I'll take the Bible, which will put me as straight as the mail, and that's the last word I've got to say.
The night fell extraordinary dark. Clouds coming up with sundown and overspreading all. Not a star showed. I was laden like a donkey. There was that Bible, a book as big as your head, then my gun and knife and lantern and patent matches, a mortal weight of gunpowder, a pair of dynamite fishing bombs, and two or three pieces of slow match I had spliced together the best I could. I had the materials of a pretty good blow-up. I wanted that thing done right. The light of the lantern striking among trunks and forked branches and twisted rope ends of lianas made a puzzle of turning shadows. They came to meet you, solid and quick like giants, and then span off and vanished. They hove up over your head like clubs and flew away into the night like birds. The floor of the bush glimmered with dead wood, and big cold drops fell on me from the branches overhead like sweat. There was no wind, only a little icy breath of a land breeze, and the harps were silent. The bogies on the wall looked mighty queer by the shining of the lantern, with their painted faces and shell eyes and their clothes and their hair hanging. I pulled them all up and piled them on the cellar roof. Then I chose a place behind one of the big stones at the entrance, buried my powder and the two shells, and arranged my match along the passage. When I stepped out of the cellar, it seemed the bush woke and became full of little noises. A bit of a crackle, a bit of a rush. The breath jumped right out of me and my throat went as dry as a biscuit. I never thought of Case. What took me, as sharp as the colic, was Uma's tales of the devil women and man-pigs. I held up the lantern and saw, there, coming right up out of the bad bush, a devil woman. I saw the light shine on her bare arms and her bright eyes.
Ah! Out! Why you use big voice? Put out light! Case, he come!
My God almighty, Uma's at you!
Yes, yes, I come quick! Case, he soon!
You come alone, you're not afraid?
Ah, too much afraid, I think die!
Well, I'm not one to laugh at you, Mrs. Wiltshire, for I'm about the worst scared man in the South Pacific myself.
Case, he come quick! I run catch you!
You follow the lantern?
Oh, yes, but he go dark!
Of course! I went into Case's cellar to bury my pan.
Then I lost in bush. I too afraid sing out. Case, he hear me.
You are the bravest woman I ever met, old lady. And now I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going back into that cave and light the match.
No, no, leave
no fear. You keep tight hold of me. I'll open the lantern and light the match. And then we'll whip out and shelter behind a tree and wait for Vesuvius to go off. Might have overdone the dynamite. You all right, Uma? I wasn't planning to bury us alive. Uma?
I too much afraid.
The place is all lit up with red coals and brands. Oh, we're sitting targets here, old girl. That burning effigy is like a spotlight to target us. I'm going to get rid of it.
I came down like a ninepin and found my hands empty. My gun had flown over my head as I fell. I turned right over on my face to crawl after my weapon. Unless you have tried to get about with a smashed leg, you don't know what pain is, and I let out a howl like a bullock's. As soon as she heard me sing out, Uma ran forward. The Winchester cracked again, and down she went. I felt the handle of my knife. Case had knocked over my girl. I had got to fix him for it. I gritted my teeth and footed up the chances. My leg was broke, my gun was gone. Case still had 10 shots in his Winchester, but that man had got to go. For a goodish bit, not one of us let on. The wood was main dark, but had a kind of low glow in it, like a fire on its last legs. It was by this that I made out Case's head looking at me over a big tuft of ferns, and at the same time the brute saw me and shouldered his Winchester. I lay quite still, and as good as looked into the barrel. It was my last chance, but I thought my heart would have come right out of its bearings. Then he fired. The bullet struck within an inch of me and knocked the dirt in my eyes. Case gave a little laugh and stepped round the ferns. Laugh, thought I. If you had the wit of a louse, you would be praying. As soon as he came within reach of me, I had him by the ankle, plucked the feet right out from under him, and was upon the top of him, broken leg and all, before he breathed. He threw up his hands together like a frightened woman so that I caught both of them with my left. He fastened his teeth in my forearm like a weasel. Much I cared. My leg gave me all the pain I had any use for, and I drew my knife and got it into place.
Do you feel the point of that? That's for Underhill. And that's for Adams. And now here's for Uma. And that's going to knock your blooming soul right out of you.
I tried to draw the knife out to give it him again. The blood came over my hands, I remember, as hot as tea, and with that, I fainted clean away. When I came to myself, the clouds had cleared, and I could see the dead man that I was resting on, looking right up into the sky with his open eyes. A little way off lay Uma, tumbled on her side. I got over to her and she was broad awake, sobbing to herself with no more noise than an insect. She was afraid to cry aloud because of the eye-twos. She had come to her senses a while ago, cried out to me, heard nothing in reply, made out we were both dead, and had lain there ever since, afraid to budge a finger. The ball had ploughed up her shoulder and she had lost a main quantity of blood, but I soon had that tied up the way it ought to be with the tail of my shirt. She could only clutch hold of me and shake and cry. I don't suppose there was ever anybody worse scared, and to do her justice, she had had a lively night of it. As for me, I was in a good bit of pain, but every time I looked over to Case, I could have sung and whistled. To see that man lying dead as a herring filled me full.
Who is she? Listen.
It must be Chief Maya and his men.
Come help you.
Oh, Uma, we're in luck. I half thought he might not come at all, and here he is, just an hour after dawn.
When is he?
Oh, Mr. Tarleton, over here.
It looks like a battlefield, all right. You've blown half the hill away.
Wilshi, you hurt? Uma hurt?
Good morning, Chief Meyer. Thanks for dropping by.
Mr. Case, he dead?
Yes, as dead as I can make him.
Well, we'll bury him here in his place of devil worship. Meyer, get a couple of your fellows to make a litter for Wiltshire, will you? They're going to have to carry him out. Can you walk, Uma?
Here, lean on me.
Thank you. I'm strong.
Old lady, that's no lie.
Mr. Tarleton set my leg and made a regular missionary splice of it so that I limp to this day. Then he got the chiefs and marched over to Papa Randall's to seize Case's papers. Randall and Black Jack had to tramp. They got into some kind of station near Papa Malulu and lived mostly on fish, which was the means of Randall's death. He went after a nice shoal with the dynamite, and either the match burned too fast or Randall was full, but the shell went off before he threw it. The black went out west, where he found men of his own colour, and they took and ate him at some kind of corroboree, and I'm sure I hope he was to their fancy. So there was I, sole trader at Falaise. And when the schooner came round, I filled her up and gave her a deck cargo half as high as the house. And now I've got a bunch of kids to support, it's just as well I can look my balances in the face. As for the old lady, she's turned a powerful big woman now and could throw a London bobby over her shoulder. But that's natural in Canarcus. And there's no doubt, but she's an A1 wife.
In The Beach of Falaise by Robert Louis Stevenson, Wiltshire was played by David Tennant, Uma, Adjoa Ando, Case, Dan Milan, Captain Randall and the Sea Captain, Nigel Cook, and Tarleton and Galochet, Theo Fraser-Steele. The play was adapted for radio by Jane Rogers and produced and directed by Clive Brill. It was a Brill production for BBC Radio 4.